Hello, everyone. Welcome to another episode of Supernatural George. I'm Mittens, and today we are going to be discussing Season 3, Episode 16, No Rest for the Wicked. It's that one where Dean gets hit with an entire elementary school's supply of red dodgeballs hurled by Apollo personally, because so much of what he says in this episode ends up being absolutely 100% prophetically, horrifically true. Written by Eric Kripke and directed by Kim Manners. And here we are at the end of all things, or at least it very well could have been. And I know there's at least some folks who legit thought this was the end of the series. I'm looking at you, Liz Bob. When it aired, there was still uncertainty about Supernatural status going into the next season. Like, would they even get a next season at all? I don't know when that was announced publicly. I tried to figure it out, but I could not find that information anywhere. So if anyone remembers or knows, that would be awesome. Just for reference sake. But there was a lot of uncertainty in television in general at the time, and what things would end up looking like the following season when production went back to a standard season. Like, people weren't even sure that was going to happen or if it would just fundamentally change television. So yeah, a lot of stuff was still up in the air at the time that they were producing these episodes, and this could have been the very end of Supernatural. Dean goes to hell and it's all sad. Like, they even tease about this, like, later in the series, like in season 5 when Chuck's talking to the Supernatural convention. That was the end of the book series at that point. So kind of a little meta statement on what their situation was here behind the scenes as they finished up season 3, that could have been where the series ended. But nope, thanks to a kind Scandinavian benefactor, I suppose, they got more published. But that notion that this is where the series could have ended says some really unflattering things about the series finale we did get. But we're not going to touch that today. I'm going to try my best not to go, see, this is why the series finale sucked, every 5 seconds while I'm recording this episode. I promise I'm going to try, at least. This episode handles several major transition points to set up season 4, some of which I feel were originally intended to fall at the season 3 mid-season before the writer's strike became a thing. Like, this was supposed to be like back half of season 3 stuff, but it's being set up now to be season 4 stuff. Like, pushing Sam more firmly into Ruby's influence and Lilith's ascension into a big bad going forward. But it's also setting up a scenario that the writers, including Kripke, still hadn't figured out how they were going to fix yet. The consequences of Dean's trip to hell. When they sent him to hell, when they were like, okay, yep, poor Dean, he's going to go to hell in the season finale of season 3. How are we going to get him out? No idea yet, but we'll figure something out next season. They really, I don't think, did not know, because obviously we've all heard the story of the first day they walked in to break season 4, and Kripke's like, okay, so angels. And up to that point, he'd been adamant that there would never be angels on Supernatural. That was like the one quote-unquote monster that he never wanted on the show. And yet, when you've got no other choice and you're backed into a corner, sometimes you take the only thing that presents itself as a potential solution, but it also works with the mythology they'd already set up and creates this whole circumstance of the apocalypse that will drive the next 2 seasons entirely. So while I enjoy watching this episode, knowing how that will eventually be dealt with, I also enjoy the reminder that they just full throttled Dean's death and damnation with no idea how they were going to get themselves out of that mess. And I appreciate that maximum pantsing power. That is pantsing to the highest degree possible on a TV network budget. Like, if I had that much money to blow on just total pants, I would be such a happy little camper. Oh, amazing. It's just amazing to me. Anyway, I know season 3 is often ranked pretty low on all the what's your favorite season of Supernatural rating things, but I still rank it higher than most folks do, just for all the work that was able to be salvaged from their original scrap storyline of Sam sacrificing everything to save Dean from hell to build on in season 4. And sorry, folks, but without the writer's strike, Supernatural wouldn't have Angels, wouldn't have Cass, and wouldn't be what we all know and love today. Season 3 does a lot of heavy lifting for a season so many people claim is bad. And yeah, I get it was a lot of the stuff that was set up had to be scrapped, but they really did a good job of tying everything in, and season 4 would not make sense without season 3 and the setup happening there. It's almost like it's season 4A, and you know, it just works so well. They took what they had and they worked with it to the best possible ability that they had. For reference, it's easily in my top 5 seasons of Supernatural just for that, because of the heavy lifting it did. And I'm okay with that. That's not terrible out of 15, but I think everybody already knows what my least favorite season is, but we won't get there for a long time, so I'm not going to think about it today, because that's my unhappy place. I think the most important thing in this episode is how perfectly it sets up the end of season 4. Like, pretty much everything Dean says in this episode is revealed to be the unvarnished truth by 422. Well, except the part about Bella having lied to them about who held Dean's deal. But for all we know, she wasn't lying about Lilith holding Dean's deal. But I think she did hide the fact that she dealt personally with Crowley, because it was Crowley who she gave the cult to, as we won't learn until season 5. But they could have read the books sooner in season 4 and found that out for themselves. But no, it's Becky that has to tell them that. Anyway, that's neither here nor there. Still, the point is, pretty much everything Dean says in this episode turns out to be the truth. And honestly, everybody should have just listened to him. And it's so infuriating to me that people are still not listening to him in canon after this. But I think it's better to touch on all those moments as we go through the episode, because I think otherwise there's just not a lot of other upfront meta to deal with in this one. There's no, like, overarching theme that is being addressed or set up for the season finale, because it is the season finale. All that's been set up. We've already talked about all that. So from here on out, it's just what actually happens and what it's setting up for the future. And I think that's easier to talk about in context. So I'm going to do that. As for bonus material for this episode, we've got maybe 10 pages of script between the casting sides for Lilith, who plays also the little girl Zoe, who doesn't get a lot of screen time as Zoe because she's possessed for most of it. She gets a good scream in, that's about it. Jimmy, who is Zoe's father. Oddly enough, the name Jimmy, which is really funny because in the very next episode, we're going to meet Cass, who is being hosted by some dude named Jimmy, right? Anyway, and Grandpa, who's only listed as Grandpa in the script. Their family's last name is McCormick in the script, but Fremont in the episode, they were probably trying to clear the name to see if they had the rights to use it, because it was named after the family in an episode of The Twilight Zone, terrorized by Anthony Fremont. And I had to double check the name because I always want to call him Billy, because the actor who played him is Billy Mumy. So I always think of the actor in that one, because that kid just freaks me out. The kid who gets godlike powers to control everybody and everything around him. And everybody's terrified of him. But that's basically what Lilith does to this family and this whole neighborhood in this episode. At any rate, there's maybe about 10 pages total. There's a little bit of overlap between the characters. I guess with that little tiny bit of blabbering on my part out of the way, we'll go right into the episode. Or we'll go to the road so far. Which takes us through the highlights of season 3. As short as it was, there was still a lot, and even dipped into the end of season 2 and Dean making his demon deal, because that's what's coming to fruition now. Sam killing the demon who Dean made the deal with. Ruby and her whole setup throughout all of this, and why Dean telling Sam we shouldn't trust her, she's a demon, they want us dead, we want them dead. And Sam arguing, like, why shouldn't we trust, or at least use her for information. There's stuff about Bella, and even though her arc resolved yesterday, and her telling Dean about Lilith holding his deal, the final bit of the Road So Far segment is Dean having to confront the demon version of himself, telling him, you're going to die and this is what you're going to become. Because, yep, he's going to die and that's what he's going to become. Or is he? As far as he knows, he is. But he's definitely going to die. And that brings us to now, which opens with Dean running through the forest, clearly like terrified, out of breath, running for his life. And he comes face to face with a growling beast. And we see Dean from the beast's point of view, and he's distorted and grainy. And then Dean turns and runs the opposite direction. He's knocked down or falls over as he's running. He's holding up his arms to defend himself as he screams, no, and the beast begins attacking him. And then he wakes up because that was a nightmare he's having. Face down in a book of lore about hellhounds. And he looks at that image in the book, clearly distressed, comparing it to what he actually saw in his nightmare. Oddly, he's doing all of this research by candlelight because gotta make it feel a little atmospherically spooky, I suppose. Sam comes in and he asks Dean if he found anything good, and Dean's like, yeah, no, nothing good. And yeah, no, hellhounds are definitely not good. His nightmares are definitely not good. But Sam points out that Bobby has found something, and he's oddly cheerful. I don't know why Sam is even smiling at all, unless he's just trying to put on a brave face for Dean, like Dean always does for him, maybe. Sam tells him that Bobby has found a way to find Lilith. Which Dean is just like, yeah, 30 hours to live. And he suggests going to Tijuana and drinking and whatever a donkey show is. And even if they find Lilith, they have no way to defeat her or do anything about it. They have no weapon that can hurt her. What are they going to do? Exorcise her back to hell so she can pop right back out? And that doesn't do anything to save Dean from his deal. But we get a peek into what Dean is experiencing. We've already had his nightmare of the hellhound chasing him. But the next scene where Sam sits down beside him and tries to be reassuring and encouraging, like, yes, we're gonna find a way to save you. You're not going to hell. I swear it. No matter what it takes, we will save you from that. He's being as serious as Sam gets in this episode. And Dean's watching his face, and we get a glimpse of what Dean is seeing. Not just Sam's face, but the horror of the hallucinations of hell that he's beginning to see on Sam's face. Hallucinations that we saw in other characters way back in Crossroad Blues that now is happening to Dean. So we at least understand why he's making these jokes, these fatalistic, why don't we just go to Tijuana jokes. Because he can sense the end of his time now. It's starting to bleed over onto him. So Dean looks super unconvinced by Sam's reassurances. And just says, yeah, okay. Doesn't let on that he's seeing anything unnatural yet. And then we cut to the title card. Post-title card, we go to Bobby's ritual that he's set up to try and find Lilith. With this weird tripod-looking pendulum thing that he swings and chants a little spell. And the pendulum sticks on New Harmony, Indiana. Sam knocks the pendulum away and is like, well, let's go. Let's go to New Harmony right now. Come on. Dean's like, whoa, hold on. We don't even know if Lilith actually holds my deal. We're going off intel from Bella, who's proven herself untrustworthy over and over again. How do we know she was telling the truth about that? Then Dean points out the biggest flaw in this plan is that even if they find Lilith, they have no way to gank her. They have no weapon to use against her. They have nothing. And third, isn't it the same Lilith who wants Sam's head on a pike, apparently, that they've been told to this point is a fact, when we know exactly why Lilith wants Sam and wants to turn him into her adversary, because we've all seen season 4 and we know how that ends and what all of this is being built to set Sam up to do. They want Sam and Dean to believe that Lilith is their powerful adversary who they must work to defeat, and they're not going to be given a chance to defeat her until they're ready for that to happen. Bobby and Sam both are like, wow, Dean, way to just, you know, tear down the whole plan trying to save your ass. Dean is like, just because I have to die doesn't mean you do too. We go in smart or we don't go in at all. Which, for once, Dean is the one trying to make sure that they have a solid plan instead of just rushing into danger. But that's when Sam comes back with his fabulous plan that he's probably been sitting on until this moment. He's like, well, I have a way to counter all of that, to prove it's Lilith, to guarantee that she's the one who holds your contract. You know, we're killing the right demon, and get us a weapon that could kill Lilith. Dean immediately knows what it is. It's Ruby. Even though Sam is excited about this prospect, Dean is like, hell no. Sam is like, we are out of time and we are out of choices. This is the only option left on the table with less than a day and a half till Dean's deal comes due. He's gonna die either way in 30 hours or less now. This is their only option, according to Sam. Dean cites every lie that Ruby told Sam that she could save Dean's soul. Lie. She seems to know everything about Lilith except, oh, she didn't tell us that Lilith owns my soul. Sam's like, okay, she lies, but she has that knife. The kicker for me is that Dean says to Sam that for all they know, Ruby works for Lilith. And isn't that just amazing for him to say it? He just throws it out as a worst case scenario. And it turns out that that's actually what the truth was of the situation. But we don't learn that for another 22 episodes. I love how all of this ties together. Even Bobby attempts to convince Dean that Sam is right. That they should take any tool that they can lay their hands on and give it a try. Because otherwise it's just giving up and Dean going to hell. And Dean yells. He's like, no, damn it. We are not going to make the same mistakes all over again. It's not worth it to Dean. Dean tells Sam that if they're going to find a way to save him, we're going to find some other way. We're not going to summon Ruby. We don't see any further conversation, but we see Sam quietly creating a summoning sigil for Ruby. He's in some sort of dilapidated old barn, too, which is interesting when you think about all the barns in the show, but especially the barn in the very next episode, where Dean summons another supernatural being and stabs that being in the chest with the knife that they're about to take from Ruby in this scene. Interesting. Sam starts questioning Ruby right off the bat. He asks her if she knew Lilith held Dean's deal. Ruby's like, yes, I did. Sam asks her why she did not share this information with the class sooner, since it seemed like important information for them to know. And Ruby's like, because you weren't ready. She insists that they would have run off after Lilith trying to attack or kill her or whatever, and that Lilith would have handily and easily defeated both of them. Sam tells Ruby that, well, we're ready now, and he wants her knife. And she looks him up and down and starts walking around him and is like, yeah, I guess you are ready. And it's a good time, too, because Lilith's taking some shore leave for a little R&R. Ruby refuses to hand over her knife, though, because she thinks that it's a pointless endeavor for them to charge in there with one knife, that it's doomed to fail. Ruby here has an answer for everything, though. Sam's like, okay, well, if you won't give me the knife, then what? You already said you can't save Dean. And Ruby's like, you're not the one I was lying to. When Dean asked if Ruby could save him from hell, she said no, because Sam can save him from hell, according to Ruby right here. Which, again, was supposed to be the original plot of season 3. This is where we first hear from Ruby that Sam has a gift. You know, his psychic powers. And Sam's like, what are you talking about? That's gone since Yellow Eyes died. And Ruby says, not gone, dormant. I feel like this would have been revealed earlier in season 3 if they'd had the full run of the season, like maybe right after Juice and Bello, so that Sam could work up to the power level to save Dean. And here, Ruby comes out with the flat truth, because we know that this is their long con plan with Sam. Ruby tells Sam that Lilith is terrified of him because Sam could have the power to destroy her without even moving a muscle. she knows this, and this is why she's been supposedly targeting Sam all season this season, in some sort of self-preservation mode. But we know all of this is just to provoke Sam, to poke him along until he's ready to listen to what Ruby has to say and put his trust in her, to be manipulated by her into what they want him to be. Sam's like, "And you're just telling me this now?" And Ruby's like, "Manipulative. It's kind of in the job description for a demon." But she also says that Sam would not have been ready to hear about it until he was prepared to do something about it. And she believes he is now, which we know he is because that's how he's going to spend the whole hiatus between seasons 3 and 4. She's like, "Call me whatever you want, but I have never lied to you." And she's telling the truth now that they have a lot of ground to cover. But if he is prepared, she can help him get ready to save Dean. But before Sam can even answer her, Dean comes out of the shadows. And he's like, "Ah, so that's it. You think you're going to do anything to Sam before you teach him anything? You know, it'll have to be over my dead body." And she's like, "Oh yeah, like, convenient. You're about to be a dead body." Ruby tells Dean that your brother is carrying a bomb inside of him and it would be stupid not to use it. And Dean is just arguing. Sam doesn't even let Sam talk or try and justify any of this. He's just like, "Give me your knife." Dean tries to convince Sam that she is trying to manipulate him, that her only goal is to get Sam to agree to be her little, quote, antichrist superstar, which, yes, the bomb inside Sam, they don't want it to go off now. They want it to go off when all the other seals have broken for the apocalypse. Ruby tells Dean in her own defense, "I want Lilith dead. That's all." And it's true. She's not lying at all. Everything she's saying is 100% true, except the context is missing. She doesn't want Lilith dead today before Dean's deal is cashed in. She wants every domino to fall exactly right before Lilith dies. Ruby argues back with Dean, "I'm so tired of trying to prove myself to you. This is how you save yourself." And she calls him a dumb, spineless dick. And he's none of those things. He sees right through her. He is the biggest barrier to her getting what she wants in the entire show. And the only reason she's able to get to Sam and manipulate him is because Dean isn't there to punch her in the face like he does in this scene. But it's all a ploy. Dean has set up a devil's trap on the other side of the room, and as Ruby kicks her way through Dean and Sam both, he leads her backwards until she's right underneath the devil's trap. During their fight, though, Dean reveals that he pickpocketed her knife off of her. As they're preparing to go, though, Sam is still churning over some of the things that Ruby said to him that hit a little close to the bone for him, like, "You've always hated being a freak, and the way Dean looks at you sometimes like he thinks you're a freak." And Sam wants to be able to think he has the power to save his brother, to finally prove to Dean that no, he's not a freak. He's just as worthy as Dean is, because he's never felt that way. And that's not even information that we, the audience, are unaware of at this point. We at least have some inkling into that. But it's preventing Sam from being able to be rational about the other things that Ruby said, like, "You have the power to destroy Lilith." He's like, "What if she's right about that? What do you think she means?" And Dean's like, "What, you're supposed to, like, give her the Carrie stare and she goes poof?" That's kind of what happens, but not for a whole nother season. But yeah, Sam has that power inside of him. The thing is, they are led to believe that killing Lilith is their route to salvation, when we know that it's just the opposite that's true. They are being fed this notion that this should be their objective, and this is the rational and smart choice to make when you believe that that is true. But Sam really wants to have that power. He wants to be worthy and to succeed, to think this thing that he's hated about himself his whole life might be something that he can turn to good. Sam reminds Dean that last time they went up against her, Lilith snapped her fingers and sent 30 demons after them. So what would she do if we were actually going directly at her you know, those demons had specific orders to put them exactly in that spot in Jusen Bella where they could be tested in very specific ways. But those demons weren't actually attacking Sam and Dean. They just believe what they've been told about what Lilith's motives are. And Sam can't understand why Dean wouldn't want to at least listen to what Ruby had to say. Because if there is some surefire way, and he uses those words, a surefire way to defeat Lilith, maybe we should at least hear her out on it. And Dean repeats what he said earlier about how they're not going to make the same mistakes again. And Sam's like, I don't even know what you mean by that. And Dean's like, Dad's deal, my deal, and now this, you want to kind of make a deal with Ruby to bring out some of your demonic powers? You really want to trade in demonic powers? You think that's not exactly what we've been doing all along here? It's a bad deal every time. Dean points out to Sam that Ruby's just jerking his chain, and you know where this road is going. You know what it's paved with. The best of intentions, but it always leads them straight to hell. Sam tries to insist that he can, quote, handle it. And it's like, dude, Sam, the point is nobody can handle it. It's demons. Sam thinks he's strong enough to handle it. It has nothing to do with strength. It has to do with you're being a friggin' idiot to think that you can trust anything that comes from demonic deals. You've learned this lesson for the last 2 years, and yet you're still insisting, it's me, of course I can handle it. No, Sam, sweetie, I'm just mentally taking him by the face and just looking into his eyes and telling him, just no, please no. Sam says he's willing to take that risk that it's going to all go to hell in order to save Dean. And Dean's like, why? And Sam's like, because you're my brother and you did the same thing for me. In Sam's mind, this is repayment for what Dean did. And Dean's just like, look how that turned out. That's exactly why they're in this circumstance in the first place. But this is the inklings of the beginnings of what will be Dean's motivation that will become the umbrella of Team Free Will. Sam's like, well, what are we supposed to do? And Dean's like, we stop being martyrs for each other. We stop just giving in to demons that they should do things their way. Instead of dealing with demons, you go kill it. And if it's the last thing they ever do, at least they'll go down swinging. Sam at least accepts that for now. I mean, obviously we know he's going to get talked back around to Ruby's plotting, but not during this episode. Dean comments, yeah, I wonder what a demon does for fun, because Lilith's apparently on shore leave, taking a little bit of a relax. And then we cut to New Harmony, Indiana, and this really nice neighborhood where an ice cream truck is going by, which isn't ominous and horrifying at all. Our first introduction to the family that Lilith is taking her shore leave with is the grandfather, who goes out to collect his mail and runs into his neighbor at the mailbox. They have a friendly little conversation about, oh yeah, my poor granddaughter's got a little bug that's been going around, and the neighbor's like, oh, I'll give her a big hug from me and the wife. And the grandfather shakes his hand and slips a piece of paper into it, goes right back into his house, pretending like nothing is wrong at all. The other man unfolds the paper and it just reads, help us. He goes back inside, is looking down horrified as he edges around the body of his wife on the floor, covered in flies. In the kitchen, we see the little girl's parents making what looks like all sorts of desserts, a chocolate cake, cookies. The grandfather comes in and is like, where is she? And the mother is like extremely strung out. It's like upstairs playing with Freckles. And the grandfather tells them, we're dead. And the mother is still arguing, it's my baby girl. And the grandfather says, not anymore. It's not your baby girl anymore. He insists there's something evil inside of her. And just to prove that point, the little girl walks in her white dress, now covered with blood, just all cheerful, like, what are you all talking about? And the mother asks what happened to her dress, and she's like, Freckles was mean to me. Freckles was apparently their cat, who she murdered, and just smeared blood all over her dress. She holds up a hand, you could see her hands are all covered in blood too, She asks her father to go out and push her on the swing, and he suggests she change first so the neighbors won't see all that blood. She's like, "Oh, you're so smart, Daddy," and gives him a great big hug and smears blood all over him. And everybody is just absolutely horrified and absolutely terrified to say anything to this little girl because they already watched the grandmother die, probably because she tried to scold or correct the child, and kid wasn't having that because it's not a kid. It's Lilith, which we already knew from the end of Juice and Bello when she comes in. My name is Lilith, and then eyes roll white and she takes out everybody in the police station. Yeah. So we know that's her. The father, to everybody else's encouragement not to say anything, asks if the little girl might let them go eventually. She's like, "Why? Don't you love me anymore? Well, then don't be mean to me, like Freckles and that mean old babysitter," implying that she would just kill him too. So basically, shore leave for Lilith is pretending to be Billy Mumy from that episode of The Twilight Zone. So while Lilith is busy terrorizing this poor little girl's family, Sam and Dean are on their way to kill her. Except they can't get the car started. Bobby shows up, holding the distributor cap. "You thought you were going to go without me?" Dean tries to tell Bobby that this is about him and Sam, and it's not his fight. And Bobby's like, "The hell it isn't." And we get that famous line that becomes a motto and refrain for the Winchesters, especially Dean, for years to come. "Family don't end in blood." That Bobby considers himself family to them, and he will not let them go without him. And then Bobby counters also with the fact that Dean is, quote, playing wounded. And he asks Dean how many hallucinations he's had so far. And Sam looks confused, like, "What? Dean is having hallucinations?" And Dean admits that, yes, he is. Dean gets his distributor cap reinstalled, and the next shot we see is of the Impala driving down a dirt road through a crossroads. This is how they ended up in this circumstance, right? But now they're just plowing right through that crossroads. Sam tries to bust out with prepared remarks about, you know, if we don't succeed, Dean, then... And Dean's like, nope. I do not want my last day on Earth to be socially awkward. Because now it's getting dark on that final day. They're hours out now. So instead of dealing with any sort of feelings discussion or any sort of awkwardness between them, Dean is just going to sing. And he turns on the radio and Dead or Alive is playing. And Sam, boy, does Sam really get into it. And Dean just sort of stares dead-eyed out the front window as Sam continues to sing, after Dean loses all motivation to sing for himself. But as the car speeds past, we see that one of the tail lights is out, which gives reason for the very next scene to happen. They drive past a cop. He turns on his lights and pulls them over. The cop asks for Dean's license and registration, tells him he's got a tail light out, and Dean's like, "Yeah, I've been meaning to fix that." And he opens his door all of a sudden, stunning Sam, like knocks the cop backwards and starts punching him and then stabs him in the neck. And we see him flash out like a demon. Bobby comes running up and is like, "What the hell just happened?" And Sam's like, "Dean just killed a demon." They ask, "How'd you know it was a demon?" Dean's like, "I could see his true face under that one." So now, in addition to the hallucinations, he can also see demons. So now, in addition to having been pulled over, cutting into their limited amount of time left, they now have to hide the evidence that Dean killed a cop. Well, a demon cop, but still, I don't think the other cops are going to care. They're not going to believe that. So, a little more time taken out of their already limited schedule. Bobby says something here. He assures Dean that this is completely normal, that because he's only got 5 hours to go until his deal comes due, he's, quote, glimpsing the B side. He's finally able to see through the veil. He's able to see a bigger picture truth here. And this happens an awful lot in the show, where crazy things keep happening to them, or they're struggling mightily against something for most of a season, and then only in those final moments do they actually get a bigger piece of the truth and realize maybe they'd been looking at this thing wrong the whole time. Sometimes it comes in the form of a plot revelation like that, And sometimes it just comes in the form of, like this, a revelation about the future to come. Dean's like, well, I'm glad my doomed soul is good for something, that he can now see demons. And Bobby's like, you damn right it is, because Lilith's probably got demons stashed all over town keeping an eye out for us. And if she finds out we're actually here, we're basically screwed. And Dean's like, okay, well then, I guess I'm just on demon patrol. Back at Lilith's, the family's all sitting around the table having dinner, which is birthday cake and junk food, and because Lilith insists that they celebrate her birthday every single day. And the family is clearly exhausted from this, and they have the weirdest shaped cake in the history of weirdly shaped homemade cakes. Just as they're about to cut and serve it, Lilith questions her grandfather, why did you ask the neighbor for help today? And he tries to say he didn't do that, and she instead tells him that he obviously doesn't love her anymore, that he's just a mean old man, and he begs for help, and nobody can do anything against her, you know, like, what are they supposed to do to help him? And Lilith is just like, I don't think I like you anymore, and holds up her hand and twists her wrist, and his neck breaks, and he drops dead into his food. And everybody else is horrified. Lilith tells them not to scream, because screaming makes her mad. As her father is just lying dead at the table there, Lilith asks her mother if she can have some ice cream with her cake. Like, all cheerful, like, nothing's wrong. Like, they're not having this horrifying birthday party dinner with this child who just murdered her own grandfather. But this is also where Dean's special skills are coming in handy. They're watching all of this go down through the window. He's like, yeah, it's the little girl. He can see her real face, and it's just horrifying to him. And Sam's like, okay, let's go. Let's go in. And Sam's about to, like, plow out there. And Dean points out, no, wait, hang on. Sam's like, what, are we supposed to just let her kill the rest of the family? And Dean's like, yeah, and us too if we go in there. Because look around. The mailman over there at 9 o'clock at night is also a demon. And he's pointing out, like, all over the neighborhood. Everybody there is demons. Sam insists they just sneak past all those demons and get in there and just kill Lilith as quickly as possible. And Dean's like, what, kill a 10-year-old girl? And Sam's like, look, Dean, this isn't just about saving you. This is about saving everyone. Because with a demon like this running loose on the planet, nobody is safe. Clearly, look at all of these people whose lives have been destroyed because of Lilith's actions, which honestly is a valid point out of Sam there. And Dean finally agrees. He's like, yeah, damn it. Like, he was hoping it wouldn't come to this. And he could sacrifice himself to hell if it meant taking her out. But killing a child feels too far beyond just to save his own life. You know what I mean? At this point, he'd be like, I'd be willing to go to hell just to save this kid who I'd otherwise have to kill in order to break my deal. But look what this kid has already done. Not the kid, but the demon possessing her and what that demon could do to so many other people. And yeah, she's going to spend most of season 4 ruining everybody's lives. So, valid. Upstairs, Lilith demands her mother read a bedtime story for the 27th time. And the mother's just like on the verge of tears, starting the story over again. While this not her child snuggles up to her, it's just unbelievably creepy. And outside, our heroes have been brewing up a plan to get in. Dean acts as bait and attracts the attention of our industrious mailman, who spots him and goes running after him, leading him directly into their trap, where Sam is waiting with the demon knife. They kill him before he can sound the alarm, while Bobby turns the entire sprinkler system into holy water. Sam and Dean proceed to methodically lure out as many of the demons as they can one by one. They next show them having stabbed the neighbor dude to death. As they rush back to the house, Dean is trapped and pinned against a chain link fence, and we see that it's Ruby, but Sam comes in right behind her. Dean is like, how the hell did you get out of the trap? She doesn't answer. She just insists she get her knife back, and Sam's like, Dean doesn't have it. Because Sam has it. He's been doing all the stabbing. And I've always had the theory that, of course, Lilith knew that Ruby was trapped and either sent some other demon to free her, or that Ruby was able to contact an ally to come and break the trap for her. She doesn't have any allies other than Lilith, who knows the full plan, but she's got to have at least a few allies who would be willing to do something that simple for her. When Dean turns around, he gets his first glimpse of Ruby's real face, and he is unimpressed. He's like, whoa, you are one ugly broad. And it's kind of funny because it's like, well, Sam is super attracted to her next season and has nothing to do with her physical appearance. It's her demonic self that Dean finds absolutely repulsive. Kind of makes me wonder what Dean thinks about his own demonic visage when he's a demon. Like, you know, he's always looking in the mirror at himself during season 10. So, like, I mean, I know it's out of fear that he's going back to being a demon or whatever, but, like, he spends a lot of time monitoring his appearance in the mirror. Ruby is there trying to get the knife back, saying, it's already over. I gave you a way to save Dean and you shot me down, and now it's too late to do anything about it. So Dean is dead and I'm not going to let them kill you too. So she's there as like Sam's knight in shining armor. There supposedly because she's willing to risk everything to protect Sam because Dean is beyond all hope. But their little fight with Ruby has drawn the attention of every other demon in the neighborhood all at once. Dean's like, well, so much for the element of surprise that they had been operating under until this point. And Ruby kind of ruined it for them, right? Because otherwise they would have been right on in their one-by-one mission that they'd been on. But no. Now they have to face every demon at once. Sam, Dean, and Ruby run up to the front door of Lilith's house, and Sam starts trying to pick the lock. Meanwhile, all the other demons try and close in. And as soon as they hit the curb, Bobby hits the switch on the sprinklers, and of course, they get doused with holy water and have to back off. They cannot approach the house. Inside, they find the body of the old woman. Ruby confirms that Lilith probably knows they're there, and yet they continue to be stealthy anyway. Sam leads the way, holding Ruby's knife, when the little girl's father comes out behind Dean, and he turns and grabs the guy and puts his hand over his mouth and tells him, we're here to help. The guy tells them where Lilith is, or where his daughter is, that he insists isn't his daughter anymore, because he's not stupid. Dean tells him to go down to the basement and put a line of salt across the doorway as soon as you're down there. And the guy's like, honestly, good for him, not without my wife. And Dean's like, yes, without your wife. And he tries to insist, no, no, no. So Dean just punches him in the face, knocks him out, and puts him somewhere safe. He's like, well, if you won't protect yourself, I'll have to do it for you. But you're safer behind the door with the salts than you are trying to play hero and come help save your wife. So while Dean takes the guy down to the basement, Sam and Ruby proceed upstairs to Lilith's bedroom. Ruby goes into one bedroom and for some reason just stays in there, even though Lilith is not in that bedroom, because Sam continues on to the next bedroom. Or maybe Ruby was supposed to be going in there to hide. I don't know what the premise of her going into that first bedroom was, but she shuts the door behind her. Sam goes into the next bedroom, finds Lilith, or the little girl who had previously been possessed by Lilith, apparently sleeping on her mother in her bed. And the mother is looking at Sam like, please do it. Save us. This is not my daughter. She knows it's not her daughter. And Sam raises the knife and is about ready to stab down when Dean rushes in and is like, wait a second. It's not in her anymore. This is just a little innocent girl, who then wakes up and screams because this is terrifying to her. But at least Lilith's not in her anymore. Unfortunately, now they don't know where Lilith is. Meanwhile, Bobby's hiding out in a house across the way, watching the line of demons all facing the house where Lilith is. He checks his watch and he's like, oh, damn it. They're running out of time before midnight. Dean takes the wife and daughter downstairs to where the husband is in the basement. And he's like, no matter what you hear, you stay in the basement. And she agrees and takes her daughter, like, grateful that her daughter is her daughter again. These people get it more than most of the people they help. that these people are here to help kill the evil thing that had taken over our house. Ruby's like, I hate to say I told you so, to Sam, like Lilith's probably gotten away by now. And Sam's like, she couldn't have gotten through the sprinklers. And Ruby's like, yes, she could have. Holy water doesn't bother a demon like her. And Sam looks stunned at this revelation, like, what? There are more powerful demons who aren't bothered by holy water? And you have to think, is he wondering, and maybe not bothered by this demon killing knife? Because we know there's demons that are completely unaffected by it, like Alistair. All the yellow-eyed demons too, but Alistair being a white-eyed demon like Lilith is. Yeah, I don't think that knife would really do anything to her. And I know for a fact that Ruby would have known that. And Sam is scared by this thought. He's like, okay, tell me what I have to do. And Ruby looks at him like, what do you mean? And Sam's like, to save Dean, what do I have to do? Just tell me, I'll do anything. And Dean comes in and is like, what the hell are you talking about, Sam? No. And Ruby's like, you can't just flip a switch. We needed time. There's nothing you can do. And Sam is just basically saying, I'll do anything, no matter what it is. And Dean is like, stop it. And Sam's like, I'm not going to let you go to hell. And Dean's like, yes, you are. There's nothing left to do. You're not going to destroy yourself to save me. Do not destroy yourself to save me, which was the original plan of season 3, if anyone recalls me saying that like 500 times this season, that Sam would have destroyed himself, become that, I hate the phrase, the boy king, because it would be literally him corrupting his own soul to save Dean. And the concept of that is just awful to me. Like, I don't know why people romanticize that as something good. I mean, I also don't understand why people romanticize the concept of the righteous man. That's not a happy title. I can't see Cass saying that to Dean with like gooey eyes. It makes me want to gag. Like, do y'all understand this? That this is a title given to him about the fact that he was an abject failure in hell? Like, I don't get it. I don't get it. It doesn't mean he's a good, wonderful, morally upright person. It means he broke. Okay? It's a terrible thing to saddle somebody with. Anyway, whatever. What do I know? I can complain about that next season, though. Right now, let's complain about Dean taking full responsibility for everything that's happened. And yeah, honestly, he's like, this is all my fault. The fact that they're there at all. He's the one who traded his soul for Sam's. Sam would have been dead. I mean, he probably would have been in heaven. But of course, we know that the narrative would never have let that stand. It would have been overturned regardless of what Sam and Dean did, because they needed this whole situation to set up exactly right for the big story plot to unfold. And some way or another, Sam would have come back. But the way everything shook out, Dean blames himself. And he's like, I'm not going to let you ruin yourself too, because I'm already dead. There's no saving me. Nothing you can do now at this point is going to save me from my own choice that I made a year ago. So they finally have their brotherly moment where Dean tells Sam to just let him go and keep fighting and remember everything Dad taught you and remember everything I taught you. And then the clock starts striking midnight and their time is officially up. But all during this little chat that they've been having, neither of them's really been paying attention to Ruby. That's when Ruby says, sorry, Dean, I wouldn't wish this upon my worst enemy. And then we hear the hellhound growling and Dean sees it and all three of them run for it. They barricade themselves inside a room. Dean pours down goofer dust at the door. And the barking quiets for a moment. Dean goes and puts goofer dust around all the windows and doors in the room. And Ruby approaches Sam and's like, give me the knife. Maybe I can fight them off. Sam's like, what? And she's like, come on, the dust won't last forever. Sam's about to hand over the knife. And that's when Dean turns around and notices, Sam, that's not Ruby. So at some point between when Ruby went into the other bedroom upstairs and Sam woke up Lilith screaming with a knife, or whatever the little girl's name is, Zoe, I think. He woke her up screaming with the knife ready to stab her. Lilith possessed Ruby, probably by prearrangement. Maybe while Ruby was conveniently hiding in that closet, because Dean hadn't really been paying any attention to her ever since then, and he only just noticed it's not Ruby now. Not like he was trying to look at her too closely after seeing her that first time, you know? And as soon as Sam realizes it's not Ruby, he tries to attack her with the knife. She just flings Sam across the room, knocks the knife out of his hand, and then knocks Dean down. Sam asks where Ruby is, and Lilith says she sent her far, far away because she was a bad girl. And, well, I'm sure this was all completely prearranged by them because bigger picture plan. Sam and Dean think this is the end game of it all, but no, this is just the beginning. Sam's like, okay, well, now you have me. Let my brother go. Like, if her whole plan was to trap Sam to kill him, because they're still going under that assumption. And it's not true. But they don't know that yet. Lilith's like, yeah, you don't have anything I want. There's no bargain here. Dean's like, what? So that's your big plan? You're going to drag me to hell and kill Sam and then just take over? Rather than give any snarky answer at all, Lilith's just like, I don't have to tell you anything. Lilith just goes over and opens the door for the hellhounds, and they attack Dean and tear him to shreds while Sam is forced to watch. She's enjoying watching Dean get torn apart because this part of her plan has come to fruition. And then she holds out a hand like she's gonna zap Sam, and nothing happens. Everything glows bright for a bit, and her power does nothing to Sam because it wasn't supposed to. Sam was supposed, everything is happening exactly as she wants it to. Sam gets up though, he's okay. And he slowly walks toward her and then bends down and picks up her knife. And she's like, back, I said back. And does nothing further to stop Sam from, you know, she had no problems flinging him across the room and pinning him to the wall. But yet now her power supposedly fails. Sam tries to attack her with the knife and she smokes out, leaving Sam alone with Dean's body. And he goes over to Dean's body and holds him, and it's too late. Dean has already gone. And Sam's worst nightmare, Dean's death that he'd been fearing all season, has come to pass. Going all the way back to, like, Mystery Spot, where he watched Dean die over and over and over again and couldn't stop it. Well, here it is. This is for real, and he can't stop it, and it's happened. And as he holds Dean, the camera goes right into his eye in close-up, and it blends into this green hellscape where we get to see Dean chained up, screaming for Sam. And that's the end of season 3. And we know that's also just the beginning of Dean's tortures in hell. But it's also the beginning of so much else. And honestly, I think once Dean's been to hell, it gets an awful lot harder to manipulate him, because he's like, what worse can you do to me than that? So he really starts sticking to that, no, we're not going to take some other way out. We're going to find the best way that we can. And he hardly ever after this defaults to taking the first option that presents itself. But this was the story they were left with being able to tell, that Sam wasn't able to save Dean. Sam's going to now spend season 4 and 5 essentially trying to make up for that fact. And honestly, he spends a lot of the rest of this series trying to make up for that fact, trying to prove that he's worthy, that he's capable. He talks in season 8 about how he's always let Dean down. And it's like, dude, it's not all about you, hun. You're internalizing this to a degree that's really unhealthy. But this is where that starts, really, for him. This first major failure of Dean. He wasn't able to do it. He wasn't strong enough, he thinks. He wasn't smart enough, he thinks. But he's going to make himself strong enough to do what he thinks he needs to do to save Dean and everybody else. And it's going to lead to some pretty awful places. But Sam is exactly where Ruby wanted him to be all season long. And I can just see Ruby and Lilith just rubbing their little demonic hands together in glee that their plans are all unfolding exactly as they wanted them to. And next episode, we get to meet the wonderful being who will pull Dean out of hell. In fact, will grip him tight and raise him from perdition. I honestly cannot wait until next week's episode because I love it. So I don't even know what else I can say at this point. Everything changes now. The whole universe is about to explode into layers of the story that we had never been able to foresee because they'd never been planned before. But also, there's so much foundation for them to make perfect sense going forward. And I love that about this show. The happy accidents of writing that a good writer will turn into future story. And hey, doesn't hurt that it's personally entertaining to me. Anyway, until next week, you can find me on Tumblr and Twitter at MittensMorgul or at SPNGeorge. You can find me on Discord at Mittens #4865, or you can email me at MittensMorgul@gmail.com. And I can't wait to talk to everybody again. I really, really can't wait this time because, you know, Cass, we finally get Cass. 60 episodes, man, I've done, and I'm just so excited to finally be at Cass. This is my second episode I've recorded this week, so I think I just am using this as an excuse to get a little bit ahead so that I can finally just satisfy myself and get to Cass. So even if y'all won't be hearing it for like 3 weeks from now when I'm recording this, I'm really excited that I get to move on to Cass as soon as I'm done editing this episode. Hoorah! Have a good one, everyone.